Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. This is a special episode of this podcast because someone watched the podcast episode, Hey Non-Duality, Your House is on Fire. And they said, Scott, thank you. Can you do a critique of present moment awareness practices or presence practices? I will not critique particular teachers' practices because I don't know those well enough. That wouldn't be fair to do that. It's not people-pleasing because I wouldn't mind if I knew a methodology well, and I know a few, and I'll talk about those fairly well, like Dzogchen, some other ones, self-inquiry methods. I'll talk a little bit about that, but I'll stick to the question, which is, can you critique? That's a pretty broad question. Presence practices. But yeah, because the person is asking me, that podcast episode was me expressing my anger, which partly as a way to like express how I had to wake up out of non-duality and the limiting context of it. It was really a personal share. But if I were to do a critique of actual practices, that's a different thing. That's what I love. I didn't think there were people that would want to hear that. I'll try not to make this super long. I'm going to try to promise to keep it under 20 minutes. This is a special episode, so it's not a real weekly thing here, or one of the weekly episodes. Okay. Where to start? First of all, I want to say I have such gratitude for presence practices. That's the first thing that came up. It's like, because I'm just sitting here as that presence. It's like, well, whatever happened, that all worked out in some way. So I'm really grateful. Or as they say, gratitude is arising. Either way, yeah, okay. That's what comes up first, because I think that has to be said, because with any critique, there's the good and the bad. There's the valuable aspects of something, and then there's the bypass or the limitation. And the valuable is obvious. It's why people are drawn to presence practices like meditation, mindfulness, resting as awareness, whatever yours is, even self-inquiry. Do we have to talk about the benefits? I feel that there are many. There's actually science behind it. In terms of the benefits of, I think, alleviating symptoms more than anything, I don't think it gets to the root of suffering. I don't think there's science that says that mindfulness or meditation, for example, heals trauma. But there is science for sure that says that the symptoms of depression are alleviated, and anxiety, the symptoms, the anxiety itself, that's different than getting to the repression that drives it. But still, so there's tons of benefits. You don't even need the science. Just hang out at a sangha or an ashram or sit around with people meditating if you've never done it. Feel it. It's consciousness. It's what we are. You might start out with, like, it doesn't feel like what we are. It feels like I'm sitting here quietly and I hear a bunch of thoughts. But as you sit with it, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's actually the foundation of this work, present moment awareness. So I just wanted to make that really clear first, that this is not a divergence or not diverging from what I started out doing in this world, which is quote unquote being a teacher of non-dual realization. This is very much in alignment with that. And for me to say that present moment awareness is not important or should be thrown out would be not skillful. But we're going to talk about it in a different way, because I do have a critique of it in the way we often talk about it. The benefits are the benefits. Here's the critique. I say this so much. People who listen to this all the time, they're going to be like, I've heard this. That's okay, because I hope you're sending links to your friends so that they're going to come and they haven't heard it yet. That's the point of repeating it. Number one, not that I'm going to do a top 10, repression doesn't arise to present moment awareness. What does that mean? It means that the conditioning held in the body that science and your own body will show you is right there producing suffering that you're seeing, right connected with it, I should say, unconscious, that doesn't arise. So when you're resting as awareness or in these presence practices, that's never going to come up. In fact, not only will it not come up just sitting there in what I call first dimension practice, which is where you don't prompt anything up. You just sit and allow whatever comes, or you just see, notice things come and go to awareness. That's first dimension. The repression mechanism or conditioning will never arise in that, because it's repression. And as you hear from the trauma researcher you read, it says trauma doesn't arise as a memory anyway. It's a reaction. It's buried. And that's what I'm talking about, that buried stuff. So there's the first issue. And that's a big one, because that's the root of a lot of suffering. And from there, it's like, that's so big, actually, that the root of suffering never arises to awareness. No wonder we're drawn to a lot of these first dimension and even second dimension practices, because they regulate the system. In addition to helping us recognize presence as the ground, they regulate nervous systems that are traumatized. And that's both a pro and a con. Because it's a pro, because our systems are traumatized. Like the regulation where we feel better temporarily, or feel more at peace or more expansive, it feels good. For someone who suffered their whole life, to even get a moment of reprieve from that in some way is good to the nervous system. It's not good as an ongoing practice that doesn't recognize what's going on there and what the need for the regulation is to begin with. The unconscious repression or trauma driving all that need to be regulated through these presence practices. Because there you just go right into a bypass if you don't have a better understanding of that, why you keep getting drawn. Because it's not just about, I mean, to me, presence practices ought to be about really kind of just one thing, is recognizing the presence. And that's it. But because if it starts to be about just, okay, now we're going to allow everything, because we're not allowing everything. The repression isn't arising. It's producing what is arising. And yes, we can allow what's arising when it comes into awareness. But if we need to have an understanding that what we're doing is, as I've said, unconsciously creating suffering. And then it comes into awareness and we're allowing it. Create it, allow it. Create it, allow it, create it, allow it. That's not bad, but what are we doing? We're just beings becoming aware of our suffering, that there's an awareness here with our suffering. But why doesn't it end? Because we're not getting to the root of it, perhaps. And we're just resting as awareness, perhaps. And the repression isn't rising. The trauma, that's just conditioning is what it is. It's a core network connected to the fear of feeling and expressing this or that, and the fear of being hurt again, and then holding back those emotions to make sure that doesn't happen. All right, stay tuned. I promised 20 minutes or less. I have the other half coming. So I don't know how we get over that initial problem that the root of suffering doesn't arise without making the root of suffering conscious from the beginning, so that the suffering just doesn't continue, and we, without us knowing why, you know, without any end in sight. That's such a difficult issue. See, I mean, it's such a big problem. If you take care of that problem, you take care of all of it. Is what I'm saying. That's why we created this path, because that's the bypass, is not getting to this one thing that's creating it all, this holding back of self that creates false identity and suffering, the repression. And that's what I mean. That's why we created the path. So if I go back to critiquing presence practices, I have to assume that we're not, of course, starting with KI. Because if you started with KI, you make conscious the very thing that doesn't arise to awareness, so you take care of the issues. But assuming we don't do that, back to presence practices, a critique I've already said is that we get lulled into, in some cases, seeking or returning to a momentary reprieve from our suffering through feeling better, more expansive, or more at peace, which our repression loves. It seeks that safety, actually. That's why there's seeking involved quite often, where we keep going back. Because I think that it should only be about recognizing the awareness. When it becomes about just feeling better, then we're training ourselves to stay away from the root of suffering and just use the pointers and the practices to feel better or to get that moment of reprieve. And that's actually, I don't think it's healthy. I think that's a big part of the bypass, is not seeing that and then continuing to do it. But the critique would include the recognition part, in the sense that if we just sit here and, for example, we really do make these practices about recognizing presence as the ground, and then some recognition happens. One of my critiques is that the context of these teachings doesn't really help us embody that if right under that recognition is sitting the repression. And yet we're feeling a lot of peace now and openness because we've recognize the ground. But then what would be the reason to go into the repression? Well, this is why a lot of monks don't. And the critique there is that they're bypassing, and Ken Wilber's criticism of that. But also look at the teachers who are sick, or there are scandals, or look at all the suffering that goes on. See, the evidence is there for us. If we just take a closer look. So it needs to be about recognition of the presence. Those practices do. And if they're not, they can be about feeling better. But even when they're about recognition, we can just land in this, like, I'm done. Because think about how many anger repressors, if you understand how widespread anger repression is, how many anger repressors throughout history shifted into some state of realization or realization and felt that peace and then said, okay, that's it. And then right under that, like those monks, was this anger or hurt or sadness repression continuing to create some suffering. And then, but what would they do? Many of them might just sit and rest and let it all come and go. But that's my critique. You can't let the root of suffering come and go. So part of my critique is, what are we doing? Are we just sitting here watching our suffering come and go? From or as the awareness to which it all comes and goes? Because it all doesn't come and go first. And I don't think that's a very skillful thing, to sit here and be blind to the root of suffering that doesn't come and go, and then just to watch all the safer stuff that it produces. Because, you know, all these stories or identities or shadows, they're all safer than feeling and expressing anger to our loved ones. See that? Or the bypass serves us. We get to stay safe. You know, we can say, oh, I've really had a realization, a recognition. I mean, every now and then this story comes up of unworthiness, but I let it come and go. Yeah, but that's there because you have buried anger or hurt still, and you've used the spirituality to just totally bamboozle yourself. You don't even know it. And now you're just watching things at the surface come and go. That's what I was doing. And telling yourself that somehow you've attained, but now you're just dealing with a few things that come and go. But those things are so directly connected to that buried stuff. But why would we go look for it when the realization itself is like what our trauma is looking for? This is peaceful. How many anger repressors would just hang out there? How many hurt or sadness repressors would just hang out in the peace that passes all understanding but doesn't pass the repression test? And they don't know it. One of my critiques then is that we use so much language pointing to presence that then it becomes about pointing away from the root of suffering in the presence. And if we say it long enough and write enough books about it, we've got a whole culture of denying this mind-body connection that's buried, that's producing suffering. And we're actually, it's like a, I don't know, it's institutional. It's so widespread, and it's socially rewarded to write non-duality books, for example, or meditation books, because they do regulate the system. And if you point to freedom, like, oh, this leads to freedom, that really appeals to us. But does it lead to freedom if it never gets, if in the way that the pointing of the practice is done, it actually never does make conscious the root of suffering? If it doesn't. And how would you know until you start to make conscious the root of suffering for yourself? How could you then know whether something that you were doing before, this is my critique, because if there are not tools in a presence practice to identify the very bypass in the practice, that's one of my criticisms of it, is that we have to be self-reflective. So I had to look at the 7 books that I wrote and say, you know what, there was a bypass. And, you know, that, it's one of my criticisms, like, get stuck in doing something a certain way, even if it's a bypass, and kind of just refuse, like, almost like willful ignorance of what we're doing. And refusing to change the path or the way that we do things, as teachers, I mean. I'm talking about teachers, let alone the people that follow that work, who in some cases are just following as teachers what we're doing. In other words, we're pointing to presence, but away from the buried stuff in the body. And then what are you doing? You're picking up those practices and pointers and doing the same thing that we're doing. And then another criticism is how we focus on identity or identities. When all of that is there to keep us safe, as I've said, it's safer to believe I'm not good enough to feel and express than it is to feel and express anger to my loved ones. The buried stuff drives it, those identities. So my criticism is, why are we spending so much time looking at I thoughts and identities in these practices? Because those come from the buried stuff. We're going to identify. The separation will be there, felt or otherwise, to some degree, as long as we have repression, because the identities are there to keep us safe from feeling that. It is a matter of survival to the system. Being our authentic self, being here now, and actually feeling and expressing everything is really the most threatening thing. That's death. Talk about ego death. See, that's one of my criticisms. We're going to talk about ego death. What is the ego? In the here and now, it's an entire structure that involves and includes the, as science says, the root of the suffering, which is the repression that produces the ego identities here and the now, and the story, the stories. That's very, very unconscious stuff in the body. Those stories can easily be distraction from that, even if we're just resting and letting them come and go. Because we're still then not seeing that, you know, if we're not, that they're coming straight from holding ourselves back. It makes a lot of sense once you do the work more. I can't be myself. So I have to identify with false stuff. I may not even know what my authentic self is. And that's my last criticism. I mean, stay within the 20 minutes, is that there's just no inclusion of authenticity or not enough. And just not including that kept my anger buried, because authenticity just didn't matter in the teachings and practices that I was involved in. That was never really brought up. I hope it was for you, but it wasn't for me. And so by just excluding that, it never occurred to me to look deeply into that question. And of course, my nervous system didn't want to. And that's my criticism. If the nervous system doesn't want to look at something that's really important, a teaching that talks about the nature of reality or how things are shouldn't be including that, right? That's part of our experience right here. But we miss it in these practices, including in a lot of self-inquiry practices. Well, I hope that helps. If it doesn't piss you off, many people already kind of know it all here because they do the work, but there'll be some people who'll be like, hold on a second, go back to that one thing you said. All I have to say is do the work and you'll see what I mean. Start with a test. I'm going to send it to you. Are you going to, I'm going to send you here right afterwards to take the test to start the path if you haven't. It's just a free test, so you don't have to commit to do the work, but it might show you something about that will connect up the dots, you know, between what I said here and then what's in your body that you discover in the test. Go to killaby.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, take the test there. I'm also going to put a link to the test in the description of this podcast episode. I'm also going to put a link to our retreat in May, which is the first time we're doing this 3D more advanced inquiry with people publicly in May, an online retreat. Thank you.